Environmental Protection Agency Region 7 Administrator Carl Brooks held an informal press availability at the Farm Progress Show Wednesday to mainly talk about the proposed Waters of the United States rule. He began by explaining that the rule was developed as a result of a Supreme Court direction to clarify interpretation of the Clean Water Act.
And so now this is the effort by the agencies to respond to that Supreme Court direction. The lawyers for the agencies who have written the draft rule have written it in a way that they believe complies with those Supreme Court decisions. We think we're also responding to Congress's direction to do this by a rulemaking. Some of you who've been in the business longer than others may remember that 3 or 4 years ago, the two agencies tried to do it through something called guidance. We got a lot of flack about that. Folks said, no, we'd rather have you do a classic rulemaking, where you go out and you take comments, and then you take those comments back and you propose a final rule, not this guidance stuff. That's why we're doing this right now.
You guys have a question on this area?
We hear from our local Farm Bureau, the Illinois Farm Bureau, that you're kind of reinterpreting that Supreme Court ruling before, that the EPA was making decisions not to regulate, but now they're kind of turning that, your interpretation of what the Supreme Court has said, around, so it gives you now latitude to work in a different manner with the proposed WOTUS rule.
You know, Steve, the most important point that I share with producers all over the heartland when I go around to sessions where we're discussing this proposed rule is, if you did not need a permit from the Corps or the EPA before this rule becomes final, you will not need a permit from those agencies after it becomes final. So that the rule maintains a status quo that agriculture has enjoyed now for some 42 years. Remember, the Congress back at the Clean Water Act start in 1972 excluded almost all farming and ranching practices from coverage of the Clean Water Act. This rule would continue that. In our part of the country, out to the west where it's drier, there's been a great deal of concern about groundwater. This rule does nothing to give EPA any regulatory authority over groundwater. We're not a water management agency in that sense. Folks in Iowa, where the landscape is tile drained, have worried that perhaps now tile drains will become subject to it. It's very clear that tile drains are not subject to this rule. So I think as this conversation goes on and the questions come up and the agencies provide answers, we get a better sense of where the real points are that need to be fixed before the rule is final.
What about people's concern for regulatory creep in this proposed rule and the idea that it later gives EPA action or ability to then come in and regulate?
Steve, I was with our administrator in mid-Missouri here about 3 weeks ago when she went out and did a series of listening tours about Waters of the United States, and I heard her say, both on a farm and at a Missouri College of Agriculture event, the best interaction a producer has with EPA is the one that never has to happen. And that's what this rule is designed to try to do, is to make it clear on the front end where somebody does not need to go to the EPA or to the Corps of Engineers to have any kind of conversation at all.
Now, farmers are apprehensive, to say the least. I mean, I'm going to bring up Chesapeake Bay. They look at that region and they get apprehensive. What do you have to say to address that apprehension?
In every part of the country, water quality challenges come from different sources and they've got different kinds of solutions. Out on the Chesapeake Bay, which is a long way from my area here in the heartland, the challenges were ones that the solution came from a series of controls on nutrients. The situation that we face here in the heartland, whether it's on the Illinois side of the Mississippi or here on the Iowa side, they're going to be dealt with through a series of solutions that are almost always driven by on-the-ground decisions, local land use practices, close work with our state partners, and innovations from folks who farm and ranch, as well as from folks who supply them services and equipment. That's where the solutions are coming from. Iowa being a great example, the Iowa strategy to control nutrient pollution. It's not premised on regulation. It's premised on setting goals and then deploying a lot of different techniques to achieve those goals. Most of them are driven by the same savvy and smarts and experience that people have used to raise the food in the first place.
And I think something great that was brought up earlier is that there is comment being sought on everything that is going on, but farmers still feel that their voices are not being heard.
Oh, their voices are heard loud and clear. I believe that we've gotten over 350,000 specific formal comments into the EPA about the waters of the United States. Some of them are probably one line on a postcard. Some of them have been like legal and scientific discourses and treatises. All of those are going to be very thoroughly and very carefully considered by the EPA and the Corps of Engineers. So farmers may be small in number, but they seem to have a pretty good idea how to reach out and let the EPA know when we should be doing something a little bit different, and they sure have.
Now, with those comments that have come in, is there a main focus that is ringing true with all of them that the EPA feels that they really need to look back at that specific thing and maybe word things differently?
Two of the points that I have heard the administrator say the agencies need to step back and do a better job on when we come out with the final version. The first is the so-called interpretive rule that includes the USDA NRCS practices. From the get-go, that was not well explained, and it has not been well understood in the countryside. I'm fairly sure that the agencies will take another look at that. The goal was to try to incent practices that producers were already doing that we know have water quality benefits. It's been seen, and I think probably seen correctly, as not put together in the right way to give people the incentives that they want and the security and clarity that they want. Second thing we've heard about is trying to do a better job on explaining this connectivity issue so that uplands, wetlands, ditches, and perennial streams are better understood at the outset as part of a connected system. So I'm guessing that that's probably a fairly common point we're getting. Naturally, you take an area like Iowa, which is quite hilly and pretty wet, so you're going to have a lot of rain and snow melt. You're going to have ditches all over the place. Questions have been raised about the agency's intent to manage those ditches, to manage that snow melt and runoff. That's something that the rule will need to be clearer about.
You're getting a lot of negative comments, obviously, from the agriculture side, as well as many other industries that feel that they'll be negatively impacted. What kind of positive comments do you get? Who's in favor of this?
Oh, we get plenty of positive comments. Everybody recognizes, I mean, whether they produce crops for a living or whether they're responsible for a town's water system or whether they boat or fish or hunt, that clean, productive American waters are one of the greatest national assets that we have. That's why the Congress passed the Clean Water Act back in 72. Everybody understands that as we understand more about the way that waters connect to provide us these waters we use to produce and to drink and to recreate, we do have both a legal responsibility but also different legal tools where we can protect those waters. I'd like to step back and say that the Clean Water Act has been one of the smartest investments this country ever made in our public health and in our economic security. You take a look at the quality of waters here in the Heartland now in the 21st century compared to the late 1960s, world of difference. And a lot of that difference comes because of the Clean Water Act. If we can take those proven successes and make them work at the waters that really provide benefits to us, then we've made a big difference. And that's where we're getting the positive comments.
Could I change to renewable fuel standard and the potential for it to be released sometime between now and November? Do you have any idea when the OMB might cycle it out?
Ken, we're here in Iowa, and as you know, Iowans are vitally concerned about the RFS. I'm talking with folks who are also here from Illinois, another place that raises a lot of corn that becomes biofuels. The agency's proposal went over to the White House on Friday last week. I believe that's August 22. I don't have any particular insight as I sit here in the heartland about when that rule will come out as a final rule. I am assured by Administrator McCarthy that the agency's rule recognizes that biofuels will remain a key part of this nation's energy picture. They're part of the president's all-of-the-above energy strategy. They not only reduce our dependence on foreign oil, but they grow jobs in rural America and they fuel innovation across the country. So I don't know when the rule will come final. I don't know the figure that's been set. That's a headquarters decision. But I do know from the administrator's assertions that it's going to be a rule that works.
What about the timing of it just for administering this, will the year be starting before potential actual number comes out? I mean, would it be an October 1 date that it should start?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure what the language of the proposal that's at
the new fiscal year.
Yeah, the new fiscal year is October 1, right.
So, and it would be for that year?
Probably so, but I don't want to get out into an area that I just don't know that much about. You know, I'm a humble regional administrator. This RFS rule is something that's worked on by the administrator and our administrator for the air office and the fuel specialists and headquarters. My job is to try to help carry comments back there, which I've done because folks in the Heartland are very interested. But the details you're asking about, sorry, I don't know.
Well, they got such a huge number of comments on that one, it slowed it down too, it appears.
Yeah, we like to propose things that generate a lot of controversy here.
We enjoy
dialogue with our partners out here in the Heartland. Although I've got to say, I'm going to take that as just a cue to say, some people say, doesn't the agency get tired of the criticism? What I'd like to say is the topics that we work on are so important to every American, we should debate these things. I mean, we should debate the way that we manage land. We should debate the way that we take care of water. We should debate the way that we use corn and other biofuels in our economy. These are all debatable subjects. Happy to have the debate. Big part of my job is to go out and stir that debate up, and I enjoy it.
Do you feel like you're getting a good chance here at the Farm Progress Show to interact with farmers and to be able to show them that you are listening?
Oh, you bet. I came up here early this morning, and I was part of a session on water quality. We had the former head of the NRCS. We had a couple of farmers from north central Iowa. We had the woman who runs the soil conservation districts here in Iowa. The audience was full of people who raise crops for a living. Once the session was over, that's when the real conversations often take place. I stood around and had lunch for another hour and just met people from all over the middle of the United States who are interested in water quality, soil health, and better communities.
Back to that connectivity issue and the ephemeral streams and the intermittent streams and the significant nexuses, I think that's where farmers, where I'm hearing, are start to be concerned about permitting and possible spraying and being next to, say, a grass waterway in a cornfield that might run two times a year if it rains really heavily. But that ephemeral stream or intermittent stream, maybe, if you look at the new maps that are put out today from the House Science and Technology Committee that released some of these maps, it puts a different stamp on things. And I think farmers are just concerned about how these things connect through their land, where they don't necessarily consider themselves, you know, farming next to a stream or a river.
When the administrator was with Missouri farmers here last month, she made an important point, and that is that this agency is driven by the law, and we try to use the best available science to make the laws that we carry out. The agency has been studying with the help of independent scientists from universities and institutions all over the country this very question of connectivity right now. And the administrator assured people in Missouri that until that independent science review panel comes out, the rule will not be a final rule. We know that we need to have the science firm before we make the law to follow the science. And that's one of the very points that those eminent hydrologists and ecologists and agronomists are looking at is, what's the role of an ephemeral stream? What's the role of connected waterways? How do wetlands and uplands work together? So that'll be out before the rule becomes final.